We can't talk too long this morning because I need to go to the bank and get a roll of loonies and then have time to come back home and hide the loonies around the house.
For what?
So yeah, don't be too long-winded
today. Okay, I'll do my best.
Because it's St. Patrick's Day.
Oh.
And so leprechauns come and leave coins in the living room and the kids have to find them. I don't have any loonies, but it needs to be a gold coin, so I need to go to the bank.
Right. I don't want to disappoint you, Alan, but loonies aren't actually made of gold.
What? They're gold coins.
I'd be careful. Leprechauns, they're tricksters. They might get mad at you.
Wait a minute, sorry, get mad at me for using loonies?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, instead of gold bullion?
Yeah, instead of actual gold, what do they call those? Ducats? I don't know.
I have no idea.
You know, what's in pirates' treasure chests?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Did you know that St. Patrick was captured by pirates when he was a boy?
No, I did not know that. I suppose in the back of my head, I must have known that St. Patrick was a real saint, but I don't know. Maybe I just thought it was made up like Santa Claus.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff made up about him, but he was a real guy.
But the leprechaun thing is real though, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. So let me get this straight. The leprechauns have gold coins,
mm-hmm.
but they want to keep them safe,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they're covetous of the gold coins. Is that... Am I getting
they
this
don't
right?
Covet, you don't covet something that you already have, but yeah, right, I understand
okay.
what you mean.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fair.
Yeah.
And so in an attempt to keep their gold coins safe, they mm-hmm. hide them in your house
mm-hmm.
in a place where children can find them.
Clever children, yeah.
Clever children.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel so bad for leprechauns. It's just such a bad move.
Are you saying that the premise of the game is not sound? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I think that's what I'm saying.
Okay, what do you propose?
I'm saying I hope your children don't dig into the logic of this game too hard, or they're going to be sorely, sorely disappointed.
What if I bury the coins in the yard? Is that better?
I mean, I feel like that would make more sense even, but it's still kind of, I mean... It's still not very safe. Unless you do a really good job of covering up the hole where you buried them.
Where else could a leprechaun possibly hide coins?
In a bank? I don't know.
Oh, shale. Now who's being illogical? That was not the cold open that I planned at all.
I did. I wasn't sure.
Welcome to Food Court. My name is Alan Sutterby. I'm here with my friend Shale McDonald. Hi, Shale.
Hey, Alan.
We're two chefs from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We love food and we love to talk about it.
Oh, man. When I listen back to that whole segment, I feel like I'm going to feel like a real jerk for calling you out.
Yeah, probably. You basically were like, that's a dumb game.
Yeah, exactly.
For a 3-year-old,
I don't care how clever your children are.
A 3-year-old looking for loonies and couch cushions, and you're like, oh, that's stupid.
That's so stupid. I would never do that. Oh my God.
Oh, I have follow-up.
Follow-up's great.
Important follow-up. It happened again. We went on our front door.
Happened?
We went on our front
what?
Door and there was a food delivery on our doorstep that we didn't
No
order.
Way.
Yeah. But it wasn't from Burger Baron. It was from Starbucks. And it was, I don't know, like a strawberry coconut frappa, whatever. And some uh-huh. kind of iced oat milk latte type thing.
Okay.
And
extra iced.
It was frozen salt.
Because it's been on your step.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what's going on, but at this one at least had, because Starbucks is so organized, they had labels on the bag. And so the order was for Deanna. There's no Deanna okay. in our house. And yeah, she didn't get her Frappuccinos.
Oh, Deanna, if you're listening, Alan's getting your Frappuccinos. We can't really share his address on the on the podcast, but
thank you.
Maybe check your app and make sure that you have your address settings correct or something.
Yeah. But now, like, I'm curious, is Deanna the one who ordered the burgers? And yeah, she just, like, legitimately has her address wrong in Uber Eats or what?
And she's really wondering. She's really starting to wonder why none of her orders are showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your favorite out of those two Starbucks drinks that you got to try? What's your new favorite? Yeah, right. Yeah.
These ones I didn't drink, no.
Not even the strawberry Frappuccino one?
No.
I feel uninformed because I don't know the names of Starbucks drinks, but...
Yeah, I don't even know the size. I know they have their own sizes, like Grande and stuff, and I don't know
what Wow. Oh, you do know one of them.
And I know Venti is one, but I just know it as, like, it's a joke to me, like, why they don't do small, medium, like, whatever. It's part of their brand, like, but
yeah,
I'm not a patron, so I don't really get it.
Yeah, I think you missed, I'm pretty sure they have a size that's called small.
Oh, is that
positive about that? But I know they have one called tall, and then grande, and then Venti.
And maybe Venti is 20 ounces. Does that sound logical?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay, so I know more about it than I thought.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the zeitgeist, Alan.
Yeah.
It'd be shocking if you didn't know that it was funny that Starbucks called their large a Venti and that it's 20 ounces.
Well, I think that's why, like, I think that I know about it because of, like, movies and stand-up making fun of it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of like a comedic... almost a cliche now, like the person who has a very complicated order at Starbucks and they use words like light, foam, extra, hot, venti, such and such.
Venti, oat thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's hilarious. That's why it's a trope.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But anyways.
Anyways. Sorry. We do have, okay, so that was good follow-up. But I'm curious to find out what's next. Yeah, exactly. Well, Burger Baron and Starbucks, I would hope the next thing would be more in the vein of Burger Baron.
But, you mean if I were to eat it?
I mean, if it shows up on your doorstep again and you're forced to make the choice about whether you should eat it or not. Because
right, I see.
Yeah. I feel like it's pretty easy to make the choice not to drink those Starbucks drinks. But, but yeah, with the Burger Baron.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
As illustrated in our previous conversation, it's much more difficult to make that choice.
Yes.
I mean, maybe not for you, but for Lisa and for me, very difficult.
The Starbucks delivery actually made me kind of sad. Like, I don't get too judgy or anything, but the amount of, like, effort and material that went into making that delivery is pretty crazy. It's like somebody, two people presumably wanted a cold beverage. And so Starbucks put together two single use plastic cups with lids, a cardboard tray to hold them, a bag. Someone drove to Starbucks, picked it up,
straws to go in those cups.
Yeah. Like it's quite a bit of waste for, like, I don't know. Just seems like if that's something you enjoy, you should keep the ingredients around your house.
Whoa, Alan, you've uncovered a real issue with capitalism here on the podcast.
We're really breaking new ground. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. I feel the same way. Yeah. And again, like, no judgment. I don't think it's like if I really enjoyed Starbucks and I, you know, felt like I didn't want to run out and get it and it was worth it to me to pay a little extra to have someone bring it to me and that's available to me, then great, you know? Like, I don't necessarily agree with the idea that it's the person. I mean, I guess, like, if the person didn't exist who was willing to pay a little bit extra to have their Starbucks delivered to them, then I guess the idea wouldn't work. But I'm not really into blaming the person who is willing to pay that little bit extra, you know? Like, I feel like it's more like the services are, or, you know, the, or the chain restaurants or whatever are looking for new and better and easier ways to access their customers. And this idea that you can have like a $5 coffee delivered to you wherever you are for practically no money is just like an extension of their way to reach you. I don't really blame the consumer for that. But it still, it feels really weird to me. Like, quite a few people that I work with order like coffees and have them delivered to work and stuff like that. And they try to sort of like group it together and do like a big order and get everybody's stuff ordered at once and stuff. But it's still, I don't know, when I see, yeah, like coffees show up there, I'm just like, wow, this is crazy. Like, I can't, I just have a visceral reaction about it or whatever. And yeah, that's not even saying that I would never do that, but it just, yeah, it's a little shocking to me that you can just, that there's like, there's room for an economy where you can have someone drive a $5 coffee across the city for you. You know, like, it's pretty shocking and kind of fascinating, but a little bit worrisome, I feel like.
Like the strawberry coconut, whatever, like, it's like someone had a cup of juice delivered to their door. Like, what, why don't you just have juice in your fridge? Like, what is going on? The amount of waste.
But I mean, juice isn't as good as something that somebody's going to put whipped cream on for you. Like, I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
I can make that at home. I would feel confident making an amazing strawberry coconut frappuccino with whipped cream on top for myself at home if that's what I desired. But I feel like for some people that feels like
daunting,
too much work, or it's not going to taste the way that they hope it's going to taste, or it's not going to taste the way that it tastes when they go and buy it at Starbucks. So, I mean, I understand, but I mean, I agree. Everyone could do that at home, but I know that there are lots of people who won't or don't feel like they can. And maybe if they listen to this podcast, they would feel more like they can. I don't know. Maybe we need to reach out to those people, Alan. We can help you make your strawberry frappuccino at home.
What is a frappuccino?
Although that's probably a different podcast. We never tell people how to make food on here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Maybe we should start.
Right now?
One segment per show. Just one segment per show that might be useful to people, Alan. What do you think about that?
It'd be a lot of work, I think. Our principal topic tonight is actually also kind of like extended follow-up in a way, because what feels like 10 years ago, we made a recording that was about two restaurants at Edmonton that we considered hidden gems. And the one that I brought to the table was Steel Wheels, Rock and Roll Pizzeria. That's its full name.
Oh, I didn't know that it had a subtitle.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Does it say that right on the sign out front?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because I looked at that sign last night, but it was dark, and that sign isn't really lit up, so.
I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong, but I think, like, the, you know, they don't have a website, but, like, on Google, it's called Steel Wheels Rock and Roll Pizzeria. And so, at the time, like, I talked about it at length. Shale, you had not been there before, and last night, we both went, so I got to introduce you to the restaurant.
That's right. I think on that episode, we promised that we were going to,
did we?
That we were going to go and eat there together and make an episode about it.
True to our word. 10 years later.
True to our word. Here we are. Yeah. 2 years later or so. Actually, if you want to know, the scope of how long it took us to get it together to just go to a restaurant together. A couple of hidden gems was episode 7 of this podcast. We are now on, I believe, episode 56. Is that what this is?
Something like that.
And we posted that episode on May 5th, 2021. So yeah, almost 2 years ago.
So the Swiss Chalet Nashville hot ice cream chicken burger, when that was released, we went and had it right away.
That's
but
right.
It took us 2 years to get to what I consider one of my favorite restaurants in Edmonton.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Although there was a ticking clock on that, right, yeah. ice cream chicken burger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully there's no ticking clock on Steel Wheels.
It's been around a long time. There's not a lot of restaurants that I frequented in my early 20s that are still open.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, aside from chain restaurants, probably. But.
Right. Yeah. Earl's is still there. Yeah. So we went to Steel Wheels and I walked you through some of the stuff that I like to get on their menu. And sorry, just to get everyone up to speed if they didn't hear that first conversation. Steel Wheels is ostensibly a pizza joint. It's a few blocks north of White Avenue. But what's interesting about it is that it's an interesting room. It's plastered in graffiti and the artwork of the people who eat there. And
yeah, man, it's crazy.
It's one of the few places in town that are truly open late every day. I think they're closed on Mondays, but they are open till 3 a.m. every day. And so it's kind of a late night institution for people eating and drinking on White Avenue. And besides being a pizza place, they've got lots of Korean elements and dishes on the menu.
Right.
And so you can get things like bulgogi beef on your pizza, and you can get straight up classic Korean dishes like kimchi jjigae, a whole menu of Korean soups and stews. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you sort of have a bit of a traditional set of things that you like to order or like a way that you kind of like to have your meal there.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think we did talk about that when we talked about the hidden gems. I think you sort of like talked a little bit about the, you know, your ordering tradition and the ceremony that goes along with it and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It was an interesting, I don't want to just rehash the whole other conversation, but
that's fair.
But yeah, briefly, it was one of the, I think that they've done a good job. But my recollection when I first went there circa 2000, like, well, yeah, 20 years ago, circa 2003. That's crazy. The Korean dishes that they were cooking were not prominently advertised. I can't even remember if they were posted, because we would always go there. We knew it as a pizza place. And so we would go and order pizza. But then one day there were some Korean students at the booth next to us, and someone brought out this boiling stone bowl of soup, and it blew our minds. We asked them about it. And yeah, so that was how we found out about the Korean food. Yeah.
How do you think that table of like Korean youngsters knew about that food? Just your impression.
Probably from word of mouth.
Right. Okay.
That's what I would think. Or I guess it's possible that they ended up there with friends or went for pizza. And if they are Korean and the folks at the counter,
maybe they were just
Korean,
chatting with them or something. Yeah. But do you think that they had a menu like with the Korean food on it, but they just never bothered to hand it to most of the white college kids that came in there or something?
Well, I don't know, because they don't have like printed menus that they give to you. It's all just posted on the wall.
Yeah.
And so I honestly don't remember if we were just oblivious and it was up there and we didn't understand what it was, or if it was in a different location or what. But
right. Fair enough.
And then to further our understanding of it and to add some of the kind of traditions and rituals involved in eating there. There was a student in my culinary class, like when I was a student, from Korea named Alex. We went there with him one night, and he's the one who really amped up the rituals and taught us how to properly pour soju and how to say cheers and all that stuff. So
right. I've kind of forgotten where you sort of attained that knowledge from when we were there last night. And
it was Alex Kim.
I forgot to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a chef in Vancouver right now. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, do you want to hear my impressions? My first impression and stuff like that?
Do you want to talk about the room, and then we can say what we ordered and we can talk about how it tasted and all that? Or, yeah.
Sure. Sounds good. Firstly, it's for some reason for me in like kind of a, like, I feel like I kind of know the area that it's in quite well. Mm-hmm. Like in my kind of youth and in the time frames that you're talking about, I hung out in that area quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And did, like, you know, a lot of like hanging out with my friends and drinking in that area. And I don't know, it's possible that like when I was doing that, it was a little bit before Steel Wheels had kind of come to prominence as like a late night institution or something like that. It wasn't really, I don't think it was really around when my friends and I were, you know, late nighting in that area. Mm-hmm. I feel like I still kept a pretty, like, even when I wasn't necessarily living in that area or things like that, I feel like I kept a pretty close sort of like eye on places that were opening up in that area, and I just sort of had a connection to the culture in that area, and so I feel like I know the area pretty well. But for some reason, Steel Wheels is just like in this little pocket that's like a blind spot for me. Which is weird because it's like right by another restaurant that I'm very aware of. Like, isn't it right next door to the New York Bagel Cafe?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a restaurant that I've eaten in quite a few times and I'm totally aware of its location and stuff like that. But for some reason, Steel Wheels just being like one unit off the main drag there, it's just like hidden from my perception. Or mm-hmm. something. And I remember, like, after we had our first conversation, I actually like drove by there and made a point of like figuring out where it was, because mm-hmm. I was like, okay, we're gonna go here at some point, and I just, you know, I want to get it straight in my head where it actually is, because mm-hmm. I drive by there quite a bit, you know, like commuting to work or home from work, like I go past it sometimes, and mm-hmm. so I kind of drove by and saw it and was like, oh, okay, that's where it is. Yeah, that makes sense. It's like accurate to people's descriptions of where it is. I've heard lots of people tell me where it is because lots of people talk about Steel Wheels and I've never been there. And I'm always like, oh, yeah, where is it exactly? And people tell me. And then I can kind of picture it in my head, but I can't like really place which street it's on exactly. Right. So I just like drove by to sort of like figure out exactly where it was, and I remember seeing it and being like, okay, yeah, that's where it is, now I know. And then after that, I completely forgot where it was again. And then when we were on our way there last night, you needed to like direct me to which street that it was actually on, because I could not mm-hmm. remember. So I don't know why I have a blind spot for that little area there, but yeah, I can just never seem to remember exactly where it is.
Well, it's a bit,
but I don't think I'll ever forget again now.
Okay. That's why it was explicitly like, that's why I consider it a hidden gem, because ever since, I don't know what year it would have been, but sometime in the early 2000s, there was a nightclub right across the street, called the Armory.
Right.
But it since it closed, and that would have, I have no idea, that would have been say mid 2000s. Once that nightclub closed, there's not very much to draw people north of White Avenue. No. Along Gateway there, late at night, because there's nothing, you go north of there and you just hit the river, there's nothing for you to do.
Right.
And so it's kind of out of the way, even though it's only a few blocks north of White, it's a little bit out of the way and on its own. And 85th Avenue is weirdly dark at night. I don't know why, there's like just not good street lights there.
Yeah, I think it must have something to do with the way the park, because like there's like kind of some, there's a bit of a rail yard behind it, and so I don't know, maybe because of that they don't have lights on the street there.
It's
something.
The end of the Edmonton or the high level streetcar,
like rail line. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, it is a dark street. And also their sign is dark. So it's kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I it seemed to me that there was no lights on their sign whatsoever. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe there was like one sort of like spotlight shining in or something. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway.
But we found it.
Yeah, we found it. For some reason, I have a blank spot for where it actually exists, but we found it. And I will never forget now because I've actually, you know, like I've been inside and, you know, it just makes a lot more sense to me geographically now. Mm-hmm. I've also heard many descriptions of it over the years, you know, mm-hmm. people telling me what the inside is like the graffiti and the paper plate artwork and stuff like that. And, you know, you start to develop a picture in your head of what
right.
you sort of think that it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's sort of like, I mean, I had a picture of it being kind of like a big open room with just like tables and chairs, even though I've heard people tell me that it has booths several mm-hmm. times. I think when people were telling me that it had booths, I think maybe I was thinking that it had like a bar that people would sit at or something. I'm not quite sure what I was picturing.
Right.
But yeah, it's like, it's crazy walking in there for the first time because it's so graffitied and mm-hmm. so covered in paper plate artwork that it's like completely transformative, you know, like it's such a crazy jumbled aesthetic, but in some way very cohesive because of all of the paper plate artwork or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just, I was expecting it to feel dirtier than it actually felt to me when we went in there or something. Yeah. And I think the reason why it didn't, and there were certainly some things that I noticed where I was like, there were a couple suspicious dirty spots. For instance, like it has a drop ceiling in there, and a lot of like, and yeah, part of the aesthetic is that patrons, I guess, can like draw artwork on paper or foam, like disposable plates, and then put them up on the ceiling and the walls. Or I don't mm-hmm. know, do the staff put them up? Or do you know, Alan?
It seems a lot more organized than it used to be. The patrons just doing it of their own accord, of their own usually inebriated accord. But it looked,
I was wondering
more,
about that.
Like, so first of all, it's probably, we were there at 9 o'clock on a Thursday, and it's probably a lot different at 1 o'clock on a Saturday.
Oh, for sure.
Sorry.
Even by the time when we got there, it was like pretty chill in there. But even by the time we were leaving, there were a lot more people starting to arrive, and it was getting a little more exciting in there.
Right. But I think they probably also have generally made it a lot more organized and and probably cleaner over the last 20 years.
Saved some of the good artworks and put them up in more prominent positions and moved some things around
and just so everyone can picture this, like these are the disposable plates, like they are affixed to the highest parts of the walls, but like the entire upper portion of almost all of the walls and part of the ceiling is covered in these plates, and people draw all kinds of stuff, and some of it's like really crude and vulgar, and some of it's really actually really well drawn and
really nice art.
Or like messages to friends, or like they're just signing their names, and it's just like a different kind of graffiti.
I feel like the drop ceiling behind those paper plates needs to be taken down and given some TLC and then put everything back up. There was some parts where I could see the drop ceiling was like drooping and stuff because it didn't look very, because it looked like it hadn't been very well maintained. But overall, I didn't really get, I mean, it didn't feel necessarily like a really clean dining room, but I didn't feel like, oh, this is like a dirty restaurant where I'm going to like eat something that's going to poison me. That was definitely not the vibe.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's just funny, like seeing something in your head for such a long time and then like walking into it and understanding the similarities, but also seeing how different it is to what you imagined was kind of shocking and really fun. I don't know.
Cool.
That part of it was great. You know, I also like that. Yeah. I don't know. I like that you can just like walk in and seat yourself, and then you have to go up to the counter to order, and then they call you up to grab your food. And I don't know, I like that whole system. It like makes it manageable for them, and they seem to be pretty comfortable with it. And yeah, it worked well. I find that sometimes in restaurants that have a similar system, there's like, and I don't know, maybe we just got lucky, but sometimes there are people who are working sort of like the front counter who are comfortable with like yelling out people's orders and making sure that people get their orders. And there are some staff who are not that comfortable with it. And so if you go there on the wrong day, it's like, you know, everyone's waiting a really long time for their order because the person isn't really like communicating very well who needs to come and grab their food. But the people who were working there last night were just like, you know, really good at it and really comfortable at yelling for people to come and grab their order and stuff like that. And it worked out really well.
Plus, they also have the old-timey horn they can honk, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was also funny, which I don't think anyone had ever told me about. But yeah, they have this like funny horn to honk if like people aren't coming to grab their food. Which I don't know if I just heard that for the first time. I don't know if I would really understand that that's what it meant. But yeah,
you actually were noticeably startled by it. You like kind of jumped in your seat.
I just found it really strange. It was like one of those like bicycle horns or something that sounds like a, well, like that a clown would have or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that sounds like a, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the environment is crazy and fun and yeah, like more, I don't know, like cooler, I think, than I expected it to be. I was how can this be okay? How can this be cool? How can this be good? But it is good in a way. It is very like, you know, chaotic. But for some reason it works.
What I really like about it is that like the kids built it. You know, the kids on the White Avenue kids like made that space. And that's what I think is so cool. Like it's not like designed. It's just like it's very organic in a way. Like it, and it gives the, like even though so much of it is really, really vulgar, it's like people, it gives the White Avenue kids like a sense of ownership. And like, I don't know. It's weird. But
it's also like, you're right. It's not designed. It's like sort of like happened by accident or something over the years. But you also like have to like, it takes a pretty committed view on the part of the, you know, restaurant owner to just like really be accepting of that, you know, like organicness in terms of how your restaurant is going to look. You know, like it's, I feel like a lot of, I feel like if I was the owner of that restaurant, I might be sort of okay with like a lot of it, but then, you know, be picky about certain things or something. But you just kind of have to like, you know, it takes commitment to have that kind of hands-off approach, I feel like, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, it certainly gives it like, I have been in restaurants like that before where it's sort of like, yeah, free for all, like customer decorated, like, you know, like people putting signatures on the walls and things like that. Trying to think of a good example.
Because the only one that comes to mind for me is the Secret Burger joint in the Parker Meridian in Manhattan. That's the only one that I've been in that even comes close. And it's not quite as graffitied as Steel Wheel, but
I don't know. Like the other thing is that all of the seating is all graffitied with like, I'm assuming, paint pens or something.
Yeah, like Sharpies and whiteout and stuff. Yep, all kinds of
And whiteout too, right? Yeah, and the tables, but the tables have like a cover over top of the graffiti now. Oh no, it's like lacquered over top of it.
Yeah,
right,
that's right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Is that like legitimately just from people coming in with Sharpies and whiteout and paint pens and just drawing on the seats all the time? Because it seems like, I don't know, it seems too covered for that to be like just have happened by accident over time. I mean, like it's a long time, I get that. But like, were those benches once pristine and someone was the first person to write anything on them?
Oh my God. Like patient zero. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I never thought of that.
And then at that time, was the restaurant owner like, huh, 20 years from now, we could get a free paint job? Like,
I mean, surely the first, in my mind, the first one happened and they immediately sanded it out or painted over it or whatever they had to do.
Right. And then like then after, realized- yeah, after like 10 months of like sanding off the white out and Sharpie every night, they were like, you know what? you can't fight City Hall. We just gotta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
And the other sad thing, so thinking about the very first person to ever vandalize steel wheels, but now think about maybe 20 years from now, and that building is no longer in good enough shape to operate a restaurant in it. What happens then?
Right.
That's yeah. a sad thing, because like they can do that renovations, but are you going to preserve the? What are you going to do? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. I think, well, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things you can do. And it seems to me that, yeah, like you were saying, they must have at some point pulled down a bunch of the paper plates and put them back up in like a kind of a more orderly fashion or something. Mm-hmm. Although mm-hmm. I did see someone trying to affix a paper plate to the wall while we were there last night with a chopstick. And I was like, oh yeah, still happening. I feel like you could disassemble the banquette benches and use them, like put them up on the walls, like, or hang them or frame them or something like that. And you could, you know,
to make come a kind up of with gentrified a new, version of,
yeah, like a gentrified
steel,
version
when steel wheels yeah. relocates to Terwilliger, they'll have a framed piece of, they'll have a
of one of the benches from their original
the
location.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, Alan. That is super sad.
I think it would be more like when Maple Leaf Gardens or whatever, those old, like an old establishment like that closes and they auction off all the seats. Oh. And so people can like people down in their man cave can have like a seat from the old like Canadiens Forum and stuff. Like,
oh my God, Alan, that is disturbing to me. I understand that that's a thing, but I don't know why, but I can't handle people buying arena seats at auction. So weird.
What? Why? What's it to you?
It's not. I shouldn't comment on it, but for some reason, it just gets under my skin.
Should we talk food?
Okay, let's talk food.
Okay, so the little spiel I gave you was that there's kind of like a little Steel Wheels visit and a big Steel Wheels visit, and for a little visit, like right. not a protracted. 2 hour kind of thing, like you're just in to actually get a bite of food. My order is a kokanee, bulgogi pizza, and a side of kimchi.
Yeah.
And one order, what they call one order of pizza, is a quarter of a pizza. So two really big slices, or two fairly sized slices.
Yeah. Yeah. Not big by New York standards, but
no. You know,
I'd
be
curious, pizzeria pizza standards.
This makes sense given, well, how much time has passed and inflation and ingredients cost and everything. I do think that the pizzas are smaller now than they would have been years ago, but
historically.
Yeah. So that's the small order for me. And then for a bigger night with friends to share, you'd be getting the whole bulgogi pizza, a beer, kimchi, and then you start to get into the traditional Korean stews and soups. And we get kimchi jjigae, like kimchi soup, and dumplings, just simple pork dumplings.
Right.
And a bottle of soju.
And so that's basically what we got last night, except we didn't get the whole bulgogi pizza. We just got one order and shared it. So we each got a piece. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get the kimchi jjigae. We got a different soup.
Yeah, we got the budae jjigae,
right.
which I had heard lots about but had never tasted until last night. So budae jjigae translates as army base stew.
Okay.
And so it actually uses a lot of the like basically army rations. like it will always have spam and processed cheese. And they don't have it at Steel Wheels, but I double checked because I was quite sure that it often has canned beans, like brown beans in it.
Oh, okay.
And kimchi and vegetables and ramyun noodles, Yeah. And it can be, there can be a whole bunch of other things, but those are the principal right. components.
And it's kind of like tomato brothy, like a thick tomato-y kind of brothy soup.
Yeah. I was interested last night. I was trying to figure out what the base of the broth was.
Ketchup.
Maybe have tomato. Yeah. The one there's a Korean food YouTuber, I guess. I think her name is Mang Chi. And I've watched quite a few of her videos, and I made a point of watching her boudet jjigae video this morning to see what she does for her broth. And her broth was made with dried shiitake, dried anchovy, and kelp, like dried kelp.
Oh, cool.
Pork belly. So that was right. the base of her broth. Okay. She didn't have tomato in hers. So,
There was no tomato in the soup at all.
Whatever tomato would have been in the canned beans, but
right. Yeah. So we ordered. Yeah, that's what we ordered. And the food came very quickly. The dumplings came like, I don't know, 2 minutes or something like that. Overall, all the food was really great. I think like the pizza is definitely weird, but it has its own character. And like you were kind of saying last night, I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but the crust is like not very chewy. It's more like kind of bready, and it's not really
like white bready.
Made in like a lot of oil. So it doesn't have like a lot of crispy edges like you would normally have on like a pan pizza, but it is baked in a pan. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that you felt like the crust was quite similar to the funky pickle, which I don't really remember super well. I think probably because most of the times that I had pizza from the funky pickle, I was drunk. And And I had no reason to try to remember it for whatever reason. But I would say that the crust was kind of bready, but it also has, I guess it has some whole wheat flour in it or something like that.
Yeah, it's rather dark, eh? Like it has a kind of yellow brown tinge to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really tasty. Yeah, I feel like, you know, the cheese is kind of like a low quality, low moisture mozzarella. It doesn't, it kind of like melts in a weird way where it doesn't fully like melt together or something like that.
Okay.
But everything was like really tasty, and the bulgogi beef that was on there was really tasty. Mm-hmm. I guess I've never really had a bulgogi pizza before, but it tasted pretty much exactly how I would expect it to. And that was really good. And the dumplings were, like you said, like simple pork dumplings, but they were really tasty, like really juicy, tasty, filling. And, they were like well put together, and they came with like a kind of a spicy soy based dipping sauce. And that was all really delicious.
The one thing to note and part of the ritual, is they have sauces put out on the counter for you to put on top of your pizza. There's usually, I think, ranch, teriyaki, a hot sauce. I can't remember what else.
Yeah, there was sambal, or no.
Sriracha?
Sriracha there,
Yeah. The ranch was on ice, which is one change that's happened. It is usually just on the counter, but yeah.
Yeah. I guess someone came in and told them that mayonnaise-based sauces need to be kept cold. Mm. I wonder how long that ice lasts for. If after, then maybe they put it on ice to begin with, but then by like 3 a.m., it's kind of, the ice is gone. Mm. I wonder. Ranch on the pizza. Ranch on the bulgogi pizza made it kind of cross the bridge into being like much more like an ordinary like North American pizza flavor. Yes, but yeah.
It's not necessary, like if there's like sweet bulgogi beef on it, but I don't know, that's just what
That's the tradition.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of tradition, we did get a bottle of shoju, and Alan showed me that the proper pouring technique, since I'm much older than he is. he was forced by manners and Korean tradition to pour my shoju for me. And
with
do you want to describe the...
Yeah, so what we learned from... I hope I'm remembering it right. What we learned from Alex Kim when he took us out was that if a younger person is pouring or toasting an older person, you have the bottle or the glass in your hand, but you... in your right hand, but then you take your left hand and also and clasp your right hand with it. So you're kind of like using both hands to do the pouring or to do the toasting. And it's a sign of respect for people who are older than you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt well respected, Alan.
Good. Good. Yeah. And they say cheers. It sounds similar to the Japanese, but it's kompai. That's what they say when they toast.
Kompai. Yeah, which we did.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot about shoju, so I can't really comment on it. But I mean, it tasted not totally dissimilar from some types of sake that I've had or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest, I don't know.
It's not
very
really
much
fermented in the same way, I don't think. So, yeah, definitely there are some differences. But yeah, I would like to try a bunch before really commenting on it. But yeah, it tasted good, but not necessarily like I don't know. I don't feel like I learned a lot about it by tasting that one example or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a simple, like it's a spirit made from, I think, a variety of grain. Like it can be from rice. I think it can be from sweet potato.
Right.
It's fermented, distilled, and diluted. It's only like 17. I can't remember. We looked at the bottle last time. I think it was 17% alcohol by volume. Right. And yeah, it has a very neutral taste. Like it's,
yeah,
I would almost say it's more like watered down vodka than sake.
I mean, yeah, honestly, that's kind of what it tastes like without, yeah, like, but like, yeah, because you can taste the alcohol kind of in a way more than you can taste anything else. But I don't know, vodka has sort of, or like, it tastes like maybe like watered down good vodka or something. It didn't, you know, there's like this kind of weird flavor that a lot of like just run-of-the-mill vodka has that I don't really like, that shoju definitely did not have. But but yeah. And then we ordered the boudet jjigae, and that was amazing. It was like so delicious. And yeah, it's basically, yeah, it's like a soup made with, it's kind of, I think, yeah, I said this to you last night. It's sort of like, you know, what I would make if I was like trying to like make my ramen as kind of like, if I was making instant ramen at home and I wanted to make it as kind of like over the top, sort of like comforty as I possibly could.
Right.
Like
yeah.
There's like, yeah, there's cured meats and spam and like processed cheese and ramen noodles and tofu, which was like amazing. And it's just like a whole bunch of stuff in there. And yeah, I could see having brown beans in there too would like, you know, fit that mold almost exactly. And yeah totally. It was just like very comforting, and it comes out and it's boiling because it's in this like stone pot. And yeah, it was just so packed full of like rich flavor and umami, and just so satisfying. And yeah, man, great comfort food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Much like, you know, much like most Korean food that I've had, like, I don't know, like Korean culinary traditions really seem to nail comfort food. Like,
totally, yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I could see the boudet becoming the new go-to. I love the kimchi soup. It's kimchi and tofu and pork belly. I don't know if they still make it the same way, but at the years ago, I found that it was like kind of at my threshold comfort level for heat. Like right. I could eat it right. and enjoy it. But it was like, if it were any hotter, I would sweat when I was eating it. That's for sure. I would need a napkin to dab my forehead. And so in a way, the boudet is, you're right. So comforting. And it sounds odd, but approachable. I love how the cheese.
Yeah.
So there's like the single slice of processed cheese on the top just like melts into. It's like a seasoning for the sauce more than anything. It's like.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
it's,
just like,
it's boiling. And by the time, you know, like, and it just like boils that cheese in like and melts it into the soup because it's boiling so vigorously. It just kind of like melts the cheese straight into the soup and then it's just gone. It's part of the soup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't that spicy. It definitely had like a little hint of spice to it, you know, just enough to like, you know, help with that rich, comforting kind of vibe. But yeah, it wasn't like overly spicy.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't finding the spice was like lingering with me and, you know, making me feel uncomfortable at all or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great. I know it's kind of cheating because like really a late night meal there is supposed to be at like 2 a.m. or 2:30 in the morning or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we went there. What time did we arrive? Like maybe around 9:45 or something like that.
9:15.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure. Alan, 9:15.
You asked. What?
No, you're right. You're right. It's just making my eventual point more and more ridiculous.
Oh, but, okay.
but my point is, I usually go to bed around 9:30. That felt like a late night meal to me.
Right,
so
I
don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of cheating, but but it still felt like late dining for me, mm-hmm. which was fun. Like that definitely added to the vibe. I'm sure it's like way different when there's like, you know, when the place is packed with drunk people that just came from the bar. And honestly, I don't know if I would want to experience that, but
yeah, probably.
I mean, maybe for a couple minutes just so that I can see how horrific it is, but
yeah. I'm kind of loath to bring this up because I don't know very much about it, but I was thinking this morning how it's interesting the similarities and the differences between a place or between Steel Wheels and the restaurant that Edify magazine just named the best new restaurant in Edmonton, Foo's Repair Shop.
Right. Okay.
Where it's like they both have really over the top, striking rooms and decor.
Right.
And they're both leaning into like, a reimagining of an Asian cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
They're both like places people go to drink and to eat, but then they're like kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of price and like, I don't know what. Do you know what I mean? I don't really know where I'm going with this.
But I know exactly what you mean. There are a lot of similarities there. And yeah, you're right. They sort of are on opposite ends of a spectrum because like, Foo's is much fancier, you know.
Yes.
Despite the fact that it's like decor is still kind of like crazy and stuff, it's like obviously designed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not designed by proxy by letting people put their paper plate artwork on the walls, but like, you know, like, but designed from the bottom up to be, to have a certain aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And then also the way that the food is reimagined is much different, you know, like the food at Foo's is like, I think that the reimagining of the food in the, well, I don't know. It's funny because like, I do think that like the food at Foo's feels like it's not just like trying to take westernized Chinese food and turn that into something that can be like, you know, small plates and fancy or something like that, but really incorporating you know, like what I perceive to be some more kind of like traditional, like bringing in dishes and bringing in flavors that you just don't see a ton in like North American like Chinese cuisine. You know, there's like a bunch of dishes that have mala flavor and stuff like that, which you just don't tend to see a lot. And so it's sort of like, you know, the way that Foo's is kind of reimagining the food is like trying to bring in some more like authentic and traditional flavors, but, you know, present them in a way that makes them maybe a little bit more approachable or something, but also fancies them up so that, you know, they can charge more for them. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the drink selections at Foo's are sort of like the polar opposite of what the drink selection is like at Steel Wheels. Like the drink selection at Foo's is like, you know, they have a wine list and a beer list with a bunch of like local breweries on it, and they have their own cocktail list, which they've, you know, designed a whole bunch of bespoke cocktails for their menu, and mm-hmm. you know, a bunch of which I tried and were amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty pricey and it's pretty fancy, but it has a lot of like similar sort of, I don't know, aesthetic, and like you said, the way that they're trying to kind of reimagine those traditional foods to make them maybe a little bit more approachable or something like that.
Or, but also like the kind of fusion elements, like so at Steel Wheels having pizza with bulgogi and ranch, like then there's kind of fusion elements, there's some fusion elements to Foo's, like they have like a green onion cake panzanella, and they've got like arancini made with congee, and they both like, and actually I haven't even been to Foo's yet, so that's why I shouldn't have even brought it up but I know that like its reputation right now is that it's like it's loud and it's raucous, like obviously not in the same way as Steel Wheels, but like
yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I would say exactly, not in the same way. It feels like a much more controlled raucousness.
Totally.
But yeah.
Anyways, and it's not. Yeah, it was just interesting to me that they seemed in some ways similar, in some ways completely opposite.
Yeah. Well, and then the thing that I think like about Steel Wheels that's like different. What?
It's actually maybe a metaphor. So like I've lived around White Avenue like my entire adult life, and it's like the difference between White Avenue and downtown, it's just like the same concept, but like how kids on White Avenue want to go out and how kids downtown want to go out.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. There's I feel like Foo's is kind of like a more grown up
absolutely
situation, you know. Maybe that fits into the metaphor as well. I don't really know. It's hard to nail down. Like I know there are a lot of similar types of people who go out drinking on White Ave and downtown. Like I wouldn't necessarily draw that distinction in the same way, but
it's just
I don't think there's a huge distinction between like the drunken mayhem that happens downtown and the drunken mayhem that happens on the south side. Like I feel it's all of a piece, but
I just think that was like a running, like maybe even a joke, like White Ave has not historically been the center for, like there's great bars and restaurants, but it's the center of fine dining in Edmonton, such as it is more based on Jasper and 104th Street and maybe 124th Street downtown, and White Avenue, it's changed. There's a few gems in there, but really White Avenue was more like you're going to drink and eat late night, not street food, but like pizza and
much more lowbrow kind of.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, that's the stereotype.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. Yeah, exactly. I realize that you realize that it's a stereotype, and so picking it apart is pretty pedantic of me to do. Yeah. But yeah, I guess I just don't necessarily believe that the stereotype is as like clear cut. But
yeah, for sure.
The thing about Steel Wheels for me, though, that like was kind of surprising and really, I don't know, really great, is that like they have like this fusion sensibility obviously going on, because they have decided to put Korean ingredients on pizza, and that's obviously been successful for them. I don't know what the like ratio between, you know, like is between what they sell of like their more authentic Korean food and just mm-hmm. pizza to people, mm-hmm. But like they have a fairly small selection of Korean dishes there. But man, like if what I had last night was any indication, like, they're really knocking it out of the park. Like, it was delicious. Like, the flavors were, like, you know, the way it was seasoned was, like, super on point, and it was just, like, very satisfying and like, you know, not lacking in depth of flavor or anything like that. It was just, like, it was really good and felt, like, yeah, felt, I don't know, it kind of, I feel like some of the Korean restaurants that I've gone to in the city maybe don't quite make, you know, don't quite make it to that bar of, like, the the comfort and like depth of flavor and stuff that I thought was in the, that both, like, the dumplings and the kimchi that we had and the soup that we had, like, all three of those things were bangers. And, like, you know, there are some good Korean restaurants in the city, and I've been to a few of them. But yeah, like, for, I don't know, just like the sort of, like, unabashedness of the way that that soup was made and presented and how delicious it tasted. Like, I haven't had a whole lot of experiences in the city eating Korean food that were better than that. Like, it was really great.
Cool.
So that was fun. So thanks, Alan. You've opened my eyes. Although, if I forget where it is again, then I may never make it back there.
Just call me. It's okay.
Okay, cool.
But that means that now you've got to take me to the new Shanghai 456, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, what a great idea.
Conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the other hidden gem, and it still is. Still is a hidden gem. In fact, maybe, well, I don't know, maybe not more hidden, because that was pretty hidden before. You had to, like, walk into a building that, that basically had no signage for it.
Yeah, it just had its address.
Yeah, I'd love to take you to the new 456. It's, I don't know, like, okay, so it's not as technically hidden, and it's actually, like, a little less, I feel like, the environment of it is a little less exciting because of that, because now it's just sort of like a, you know, before it was in an airport cafeteria, and now it's just, you know, sort of,
now it's a restaurant,
a pretty normal, like Chinese restaurant type of thing with, like, you know, a few round tables and some square tables stuck in the corners. And I think on the round tables, you can, like, have a Lazy Susan and stuff like that, which is cool. But yeah, the food there is still amazing, and I'm happy to eat it anytime. And so I'm happy to take you there and pour your tea, since you were so kind to pour my shochu last night.
Yeah. And they still have the Edmonton Flying Club ceramic plates, so that they've got that going for them.
Yeah, that is true. They still do have them. I don't know if they exclusively serve on them. I don't remember from last time if I was there, if they, like, if everything is served on an Edmonton Flying Club plate, but yeah, definitely is still a few of them.
When they, cause, at Nate Culinary School, like, we have a big plate room where we keep all of our ceramics, and I'm like, very, I know all of the plates by name and am very interested in who manufactured them. And because it's like, it's conversations that you need every time there's an event or a new menu rollout, you have to talk about what plates you're going to use. And, but one of the things that is really frustrating is that sometimes there's, like, a great plate, but we only have, like, whatever it is, 8 or 10 of them. And so it's like, oh, do we have, that's not really enough. Like, if we're going to feed 70 people a la carte most nights, blah, blah, blah. And so if a plate breaks, it's not just like, shoot, a plate broke and now we have to clean up. I'm like, oh, now we only have 8 of the steelite spiro 10 inch square dinner, whatever it is. And I imagine that that anxiety must be ratcheted to 11 for the people at Shanghai 456 if they're still using those Edmonton Flying Club plates from the mid 20th century.
Oh my god, no kidding. I feel like they may have a bit of a leg up on you, because I feel like maybe those plates are indestructible, like, you could throw them at the wall and they could hit the ground and they wouldn't break, but but yeah, at the same time, yeah, it's probably a slow countdown to when they have to completely overhaul their service ware, because, like, eventually they will run out of those plates and then they'll have to come up with some other idea. It's pretty sad. I hope before the last one breaks that they put it in a frame and put it on the wall.
Thanks for listening to Food Court, a podcast recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Food Court is hosted by Alan Sutterby and Shale McDonald. Theme music by Ryan and Shale McDonald. Make sure to subscribe to Food Court in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or in your favorite podcast player. We love to hear from our listeners. Please drop us a line at feedback@foodcourt.fm or find us on Instagram at Food Court Podcast. If you want to spread the word, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode. Thanks for listening.